Joe Coyote.
Cody Coates, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. So, as always, let's start with some follow-up.
Let's kick it off.
Yeah, and this is follow-up regarding last week's follow-up. So, last week, Joe wrote in and was talking about different ideas Twitter could do with their platform, having, like, tabs, and you mentioned that you thought of something similar. We kind of riffed on that for a little bit.
Ness. Patent pending.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be getting credit for that. And then a listener named David tweeted at the show account, and he mentioned that, you know, if you hop on Tweetbot, you can make these lists and kind of you can make like different lists and designate users to it. He basically just wanted to say there's no need to wait for Twitter on this. I like where he's thinking, and I think that is a great idea. What I wanted to maybe make a little clearer is that in the grand scheme of things with Twitter users, so Twitter has about 300 million users, and like something like Tweetbot may have, I mean, there's no official numbers out there, but from what I hear, may have like 100,000 users out of all of the 300 million users. I don't want to speak for you, Cody, but I think what we were more gearing towards is something that's really user-friendly, really understandable, and that could kind of appeal to the mass market. Because I like where David's head at, and that's kind of like our demographic is this nerd demographic who likes all the third-party ads and kind of likes digging through the settings. But I think what we were more talking about was kind of how can Twitter appeal to the moms and the pops, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's Twitter's platform. Like, it's their responsibility. The nice thing is that third-party apps like Tweetbot, they, you know, tighten up and get the slack that Twitter leaves behind and actually do a much better job of creating an app that, you know, uses the Twitter platform. So if Twitter wants to stay relevant, they can't really, because they are cutting off their third-party developers, they can't rely on them to provide the ideal experience. And secondly, like, I would do this, except it's too much work. Like, I don't want to go through and create a bunch of lists. I want Twitter to create this for me. To say, oh, hey, it looks like you're following a lot of tech people. Let me make a tech tab for you. Do you think maybe you want to add these people to it? Or just automatically include trending topics that, you know, people and that you follow in this little nest, patent pending, are nest, or what they're talking about, automatically include trending topics and stuff like that. Twitter just needs to do the work.
And who knows? I mean, maybe they can revamp lists, because lists is really not a popular feature.
Well, it's too much work. It's too much work to go in and add all of these people, and then you follow someone new and you forget to add it to the list. Like, it's a lot of maintenance, and exactly. No one wants to do all of that maintenance.
So moving on to what Twitter should do, the investor Chris Sacca, who if you remember, wrote a very, very long blog post about like what Twitter should be, what direction they should go. And then a couple months later, they had the CEO reshuffle, and then Jack was back in. But he went on a bit of a tweet storm. He didn't go blog post this time. He went on a tweet storm, essentially saying that, you know, he is putting it out there. He wants Jack as CEO. He wants it. He wants Ev to be the chairman of the board. He wants Adam Bain to be promoted. And he was pretty much just, you know, staking his claim. And this is what should be done. And one of his tweets were like, just get it done, Twitter, and let's move on. Let's move on to making good products. Because I see where he's coming from. I think this is definitely holding up the release of new stuff. I think that if they are going to release new stuff, they want to do it under a new CEO, or at least even if Jack is the new CEO, they want to do it under an official CEO, because they want to show from the outsider's perspective, they want to show that this CEO is really the person to turn the company around, even though these products may be like already baked in certain cases. What do you think?
I wish I knew all of these people and like when you say these names, I had context for like who they are, because I don't have a good, I don't keep track of all of these people and kind of the Twitter CEO drama.
I mean, as far as the product, do you think that they should hold things back until a new CEO is in place, or should they just start releasing this stuff?
Well, I think it's hard for anyone to at Twitter to follow when essentially if some new guy comes in and pulls a Steve Jobs and is like, hey, we're getting rid of all this stuff. You know, I think it probably people that work there probably don't have the motivation or kind of like just slowly waiting to see what happens before they actually push something out. So they definitely do need a leader, and this kind of back and forth and interim CEOs, I don't think is helping Twitter.
So let's move on to topics. So,
Apple.
Yeah. So, Gurman and a bunch of other people got a couple of different exclusives over the past week, and the first one came out of BuzzFeed.
They are just BuzzFeed's getting it. They're taking Gurman spotlight.
Exactly. I mean, John Piskowski. His sources are pretty damn good, and you're right, Gurman better watch out, because Gurman was really the only guy in town for some time. It's been pretty quiet elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, the whole beginning of this year, it seemed like every rumor was Mr. Gurman.
Exactly.
Just, like, saying, this is exactly what's going to be happening. You know, with the MacBook release, he had all of those details, but I guess he went on vacation, and gotten many scoops lately.
You cannot take a vacation, Cody. That's where people pull ahead. And John has found out from his sources that Apple is going to have their new iPhones/new Apple TV event September 9th. I'm super excited. That's less than a month away now. I mean, this is finally happening. We're going to see.
We've been waiting so long.
And at this point, I'm not even concerned or excited about the iPhone. I'm concerned and excited about the Apple TV. I'm so like just ready for it. And it seems like he was pretty adamant that the Apple TV is going to come with this App Store. I mean, to pair it with something that came out today from Bloomberg, Bloomberg's confirming that this live TV service that Apple wants to get off the ground is pretty much stalled at this point. And I'm not really too surprised. It's gonna take some real convincing and pulling a lot of arms and legs and doing a lot of back dealings with other companies to get everybody on board for streaming TV service. I mean, there's been a lot of horror stories with like Arrow and these other companies, and Apple they just want to do it right, or they're not going to do it at all. And now that I'm looking at this, I'm leaning towards they may abandon it.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly. At this point, I don't care either way. I just want a new freaking UI for my Apple
TV. Exactly.
That's all I care about right now. So I actually today at work, someone said like, oh, hey, do you have an Apple TV? And I was like, of course. you know, I'm the biggest Apple fanboy that you know. Of course I have an Apple TV. and he said, well, are you going to get the new one? And I was like, dude, this is like what I've been waiting for like the past year. Like, new iPhone, that's great. I'm probably going to get that as well. But I just want this new Apple TV. It's so frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, and then the other... This was a Gurman scoop.
He's back in the game.
And he got some more details about Force Touch on the iPhone 6S, as everyone's calling it, and it most likely will be called that. Very interesting, because I think we all had the same question in mind. What will Apple use Force Touch for on the iPhone? Because with the Apple Watch, it was a necessity to have Force Touch due to the small screen, and it hit a lot of menus. You know, everyone was thinking, you know, is that what it's going to be used for on the iPhone? The iPhone has larger and larger displays each year. And it's interesting. This Force Touch is going to be used for a combination of a couple of things. One is shortcuts, which I really like, especially if they're customizable. The other is just kind of different actions. So particular Apple apps will have, like, for example, Maps. You'll be able to kind of force touch a dropped pin, and that will immediately go into directions. Little things like that. I think it'll be definitely welcomed, and a reason for some people to jump to the 6S from the 6. I mean, especially if they're going to up the RAM and they're going to, up the camera. I think this year's S release looks like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny. They've done this twice now. With the 5 to the 5S, they did Touch ID. And now from the 6 to the 6S, they're doing Force Touch. And it's a really clever way to get people to go from, to keep the same design, and still pay for a new phone the next year. Just add a really, really cool hardware feature that you just don't get on the old version. I was actually talking to a coworker. He was, what are you going to talk about on the podcast? And I said, well, there was the Force Touch rumors. And he said, how do people know about this? Like, how do you know that force touching on a location in Maps takes you directly to turn by turn? And I was like, well, that's actually Apple's big problem right now. Mm-hmm. Of there are so many features and people just don't know what they do. And so I don't know if you remember this, but I remember this happening all the time at the Genius Bar. If someone would come in and say, oh, well, my phone's doing this weird thing. And I'm like, okay, what's it doing? Oh, well, this thing pops up or it goes away or something happens. And I'm like, okay, well, the only way that that happens is if you press this button or you do this gesture. Mm-hmm. Or you do, a big one was...
Do not disturb.
Oh, yeah, that. I think on the Mac of all my windows are gone. All my windows just disappear. Oh, yeah. Because mm-hmm. they would do 3 fingers up on the trackpad and clear the, show the desktop. And that's one of the problems that Apple has, is they have all these features, but for common users who aren't going to Apple.com and reading up on the latest OS or aren't sitting in at the Apple Store to a workshop or, someone at the Apple Store helping them or having a nerd friend like us tell them all about it, all of this seems like magic and it's frustrating. And they tried to combat it with the Tips app, but... They need a better onboarding.
They really
do. And I want to see how they solve that problem, or if they even do, with Force Touch.
Yeah, and with the Apple Watch, I hear a lot of friends and other people I know who have Apple Watches say, like, they just Force Touch everything just to see if something is going to come up. And with more surface area on the iPhone, who knows what these different Force Touch functionality is going to do. So you almost have to, as a developer, say they open up Force Touch to third-party developers, you almost have to have that kind of guided tour as far as, like, in the beginning of your app, like, oh, Force Touch, and that'll bring up, this menu.
Apple hasn't done it yet. And so I wonder if it's just they haven't figured out the right design way to do it that makes them happy, instead of like blocking the UI and kind of taking people on like a guided tour. They haven't done that yet. So I wonder if they'll do it with this, because it really will be a problem if people are like, oh, I press my phone and, it randomly just did this. How do I? Because I see people who they will just like peck on their phone, like as hard as possible, tap on it. People like who didn't grow up with expecting touch screens to just, they expect it to be an actual button. And so people will be pressing, like, I think some people, that will be their default press is Force Touch.
Yeah.
And they'll be confused when things aren't going as expected.
Especially if they do the tactile feedback with the kind of the...
What's my phone buzzing for? Every time I touch it, it goes off.
Exactly. A couple other things about Force Touch. I was just listening to Upgrade and Jason Snell. He just mentioned it real quickly, but I want to touch on a little more is this could, in the future, open up to Apple eliminating the home button, which I think is really, really compelling. It may take a couple generations, but if you get everyone used to Force Touch on the iPhone, they should be able to eventually eliminate the home button, which means more screen real estate, more edge-to-edge.
But where does Touch ID go?
Yeah, I mean that's what it always comes back to is Touch ID, and I don't know, maybe they put it on the back. I know that sounds crazy, but when you rest your phone in your hand, I don't know. That's really the million-dollar question is where do they put Touch ID? Because I now can't live without Touch ID. It's so great. And then the next thing that, about Force Touch is German mentioned at the end of the article that some type of Force Touch technology will be paired with a stylus for the iPad Pro. So that'll be interesting to see what type of features that has. And I don't know if the iPad Pro will be announced alongside of these products in September, maybe a little bit later. But Force Touch is here to stay.
I think that'll get its own event.
Yeah, Force Touch is here to stay, and people are going to have to get used to it, whether they like it or not, because it's going to start taking on more and more functions of an app, and people are going to start relying on it more and more, I feel like, as more devices get it and as more app developers kind of accept it.
So Google did some surprising news this week.
Yeah, Google.
No, I don't think anyone was expecting this.
Google takes the cake for top tech story of the entire summer. This was wild. I mean, we're going to have to really stop referencing Sergey Brin and Larry Page's company as Google, because it is now Alphabet. At first, I think I was just as confused as everyone else as to what Alphabet was, was it just a renaming of Google? But it seems like Alphabet is this new company that Larry and Sergey are the CEO and president of. And within Alphabet, there are these different subsets of companies, and Google is one of them, and Nest is another one of them. And after kind of thinking about it over the past couple of days, I really think it is a smart move on their part to kind of distance the Google brand from certain other products that they own. I
would change your statement there and say to prevent Google's brand from dominating their other companies.
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, because like with Nest and Google Ventures and like the self-driving car, those will all, Google has a great brand, but it also has a not so great brand of Google knows everything about you. And the more distance they can create between, something that's controlling the temperature in your house and knowing everything that you've searched on the internet is going to be good for both Nest and Google.
Yeah, and then in Google, they kind of stripped a couple of products away from it. I mean, it just has a couple of focus things, and it just seems like they're setting themselves up for a lot of different new avenues. And I think the one obvious one that comes to mind for me is, I feel like it would make more sense now more than ever for Alphabet to consider purchasing Twitter. I mean, it would.
Everyone's talking about this.
Well, everyone was always talking about Google buying Twitter, and I don't think I necessarily agreed with that. It just didn't make any sense. But I feel like whether it's Twitter or another company, I feel like them setting themselves up in a bigger, umbrella company called Alphabet, this allows them to make these type of purchases, and people don't feel as, who exactly owns this company? I mean, the search engine, they own this company. I would be all for a Twitter acquisition.
I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent about it. When this story first came out, I was like, what? Like, this is kind of strange that they're doing this. But like you said, as time kind of went on and people were writing stories about it and we were getting more clarity, it definitely makes sense. It gives room for all the other companies to breathe. And I don't know if Twitter needs to be within this umbrella company and have the Alphabet brand. like we've been complaining about over the past 3 weeks. They just need to do something. And I don't know, I guess going under Alphabet, maybe they will have better resources and better leadership, which will help. But I don't really know if it's in the best interest of Alphabet. I mean, what do you think Alphabet gets out of buying a company whose stock has, you know, gone below their original IPO mm-hmm. price? Like, what does that do for them?
Exactly, and that's a good point. I think that they, if they were going to acquire Twitter, this would be a long-term investment. You nailed it on the head. The resources would be the biggest thing that Twitter would get. Resources, new leadership, maybe even just more leadership advice, more counseling from other CEOs. And I think that they could build Twitter into the brand that it should be. It's amazing how much brand recognition Twitter has and how ingrained it is when you watch television with hashtags and everyone has their Twitter handle next to their name. And yet they aren't flourishing. If there's any company that could at least assist them or accelerate, maybe that's the word I'm looking for, a way for them to accelerate into the company that they should be. And I don't think I mentioned last week, I don't know if they'll ever get to Facebook type of stats and numbers. But I think that would be really ideal. And then over time, I think Alphabet is going to become it's going to become a juggernaut, and people are going to eventually disassociate it with Google. I think it's amazing. I mean, who would have thought that the two founders of Google would make this type of move? But you know, like they said, they always intended Google to be a company that put out weird and quirky and different ideas, but it just never. You know, just never made sense branching off from the search engine company, and now they're kind of branching off from just this big conglomerate that owns all of these different aspects.
Yeah, it gives them elbow room to try and do things and not have to think how will it work into Google, which is you know, if you would have asked me a week ago, should Google buy Twitter? I don't know. Like, Google sucks at social. That's why Google Plus failed. Now,
exactly.
Does Alphabet suck at social? We don't know, because mm-hmm. Alphabet hasn't done social yet. So maybe Google buying Twitter, bad idea. Alphabet buying Twitter, I don't know. It sounds maybe not so good of an idea, but it's better of an idea than Google buying Twitter.
And who knows? For, you know, Twitter aside, Tesla. I mean, you name it. I mean, I feel like if I heard tomorrow that Alphabet bought company X, it would all make sense to me. I'd be like,
yeah.
Well, this is what they were made to do. They like to have all these other different companies. And it fits the name. It fits the name. You know, they have.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Of like, you know, it doesn't really make. It seems unclear what they're trying to do with Alphabet, but give them a couple years, and as soon as they start buying companies and their companies start growing, it's all going to make sense of why they mm-hmm. did this and why they broke out from or separated Google.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, do you think there were any companies that are still within Google that you think should not be within Google?
I don't know if I have the master list up here. I think I believe Google still has YouTube, and it still has I believe it still has Android and things of that nature. And now they're kind of building their whole brand with Google Photos. I think that subtracting companies doesn't really bother me. If they added different companies within it now, that would maybe seem a little odd, but I feel like all the current, like before Alphabet was Alphabet, pretty much all the different Google services that were under Google made sense to me. I think, they didn't call it Google Nest for a reason. Now we know that reason.
Yeah.
All these other companies, they didn't put Google in front of them. These companies that they acquired, and it was because they weren't really sure where it was going to fit. Yeah, I think that everything worked out.
I kind of wish they would have broken out Android and Android become its own thing. And I know Android's super reliant on Google, but there is the part of Android that they sell to, you know, there's the Android OS that they sell to like HTC, Samsung, and that doesn't come necessarily with all of the Google services. Those are kind of have to be turned on. Like especially when you build, if you build an app for Android, you have to, you can build it for Android, but then if you want all the Google services, you have to build that with a special version. Something along those lines. I've never built an Android app, so I'm just going off of the things that I have read. But so I would have liked to have seen them break the core Android out into a separate company and put resources into that and make the OS kind of be on its own and not tie it so directly to Google and the ad business and search. And I wish they were kind of like brothers that work together instead of being, you know, underneath each other. Yeah.
Yeah, because Android I mean, I feel like it always felt like an independent brand. I mean, we always knew that you needed a Google account to kind of start off, but it just always felt separate. So, yeah, I mean, breaking them off into their own company, the reason I think that it may not make sense is, you know, they kind of don't, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, they don't make much money off of Android. I mean, they started Android.
That's with open probably source. Why they're still in Google.
Yeah, so it would be kind of embarrassing for Android's earnings to come around, and they're kind of in the negative. So you know, let Google pay for all the Android engineers' salaries, and we'll leave it at that.
So, Currency still alive? Surprise, surprise.
Oh, Currency, A, we all know that it's just a joke, but B,
you don't want to pay with a QR code?
I don't know if you remember, Cody, but I had a story where I went into a Rite Aid and I noticed that their point of sale terminals changed to the same point of sale terminals that Panera Bread has. And I mentioned that I tried my iPhone, it still denied me. But it was a little suspicious because it made me think, well, interesting. If they have the same point-of-sale terminals as Panera all of a sudden, it sounds like they're prepping for Apple Pay. And lo and behold, I found an article by, I believe, CNET. And Apple Pay and Google Wallet now accepted at Rite Aid. Interesting that this title of the article still calls it Google Wallet.
I was just about to say, I thought it wasn't called Google Wallet anymore.
But now that I'm thinking about it, Android Pay, I believe, is paired with the next OS, and that next OS is still in kind of development. You know, it's kind of like, that was like their WWDC Google I.O., so it, right. It hasn't been officially out yet.
It also won't come to most of the Android phones at all, so.
I'm excited. I mean, in New York, I have Duane Reade, I have Rite Aid, I got CVS. Now Walgreens. Two out of the three. Well, Walgreens and Duane Reade are the same company. Yeah. So two out of three convenience stores. I am a lot happier. My options are now, you know, a lot more open when it comes to going to places and paying with my iPhone.
Only the bodegas would start taking Apple Pay.
Exactly. Maybe Square can hook them up with a couple of Apple Pay little readers. Aside from Rite Aid, you know, that was a victory for me. Recode had an article saying that it looks like Currency has been delayed even further. I mean, we all heard about Currency what feels like a year plus ago. It's now...
Yeah, it was like right when Apple Pay was coming out.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be slated until 2016. And, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if it just doesn't come out and they just totally can it. I mean, if
I think they're out of the game.
They have to be out of the game. I mean, especially, I mean, I don't want to skip ahead, but now, you know, Samsung announced Samsung Pay, how original, don't get me started. it's like they have all these competitors pretty much copying Apple because, you know, that's just how they do. And they're really taking a cue out of a page out of Apple's book. I mean, it's NFC. No one wants to have to open up an application or fiddle with their phone to pay for it. I mean, currency's basis, like you said, to begin with, was so convoluted. I mean,
yeah.
QR codes never took off. They never took off. And I mean, it's sad. It's sad that they never took off, but the problem is you always needed some kind of third-party app to read a QR code. And like, all right, currency, you may get some coupons and you may get some deals if you
use it. Yeah, but that's coming to Apple Pay too, so...
Exactly. The loyalty cards are coming to Apple Pay. So I feel like currency should cut their losses and they should just, you know, look into a, you know, a totally different type of, you know, I don't know, company business model app. Because when it does launch, I feel like it's going to be – it's going to launch into like a sad state of like, okay, we're out there and people are just going to keep using their either credit cards or they're going to go to Apple Pay or Android Pay or Samsung Pay.
Brought up a couple points that I read stories on this week. I think it was Phil Schiller who like retweeted some like Android dude is now saying, yeah. Hey, I'm carrying an iPhone and he's been carrying it for the past 2 months and he's not moving back to Android. And one of the things he said was Apple Pay, and Apple Pay is just pure magic. And he said, so because great. On Google Wallet, I had to unlock my phone, go to an app, choose the correct card, and then bring it up to the NFC reader to just pay. And all it is on Apple is hold your phone and press your thumb or just double tap your watch. And, you know, that simplicity, currency doesn't have, and you're out. Like, as soon as the transaction has more steps than take out wallet, take out card, you've lost. And if you can get in more than one, less than one step or one or less, then you win. And the other thing was both Samsung, you brought up Samsung Pay. And so Samsung Pay and currency, I think they failed where they didn't go in with the banks, but rather they went in with the stores. And Apple Pay started with the banks, right? They made their partnerships with the banks first. And I think that was a smart move because that's where the money is, right? And if the bank says no, then it doesn't matter what you know, what form of payment you're using in the store, whether it's currency or Samsung Pay. If the bank declines the transaction because they don't like it, then you're out, right? But Apple went to the banks, and I think that's one major reason why Apple's succeeding is, I mean, I bank with Chase, and I also have a Citi credit card. I've gotten promotion emails, you know, you'll get this many extra points if you use Apple Pay. I've gotten all these emails about, hey, Apple Pay is out, use Apple Pay from my banks. And, you know, that's really powerful when people get an email or a letter from their bank that holds weight. But when you get a flyer in your mailbox from Target, that doesn't hold as much weight when you get it from your bank, right?
Exactly. And I think what this all goes to show is that Apple made a good bet, because sometimes Apple makes
and a great product.
Yeah. But listen, I'll admit it. Sometimes Apple makes bets on certain technology, and when they are the first, someone executes it better the second time around. And that's clear with Siri. Siri came out, Google executed a ton better with Google Now, and then Siri kept playing catch up, and in my opinion it still is. But something Maps. Like Apple Pay, they came out with Apple Pay and it's been a hit from the start, and then Google emulated it in a crappier fashion. You have to do an extra step with Android Pay. With Android Pay, you have to like wake up your screen manually, unlock it, and then kind of go towards the card reader. With Apple Pay, you literally just take your phone out in one fluid motion, and it wakes up already once it knows it's near NFC. And I'm not really sure what. So Samsung came out with Samsung Pay today, and it's again a copy of Android and Apple Pay with NFC chip. I'm not sure how it functions. I didn't get enough time to read up on it. But it's clear that everyone's going with NFC. And now it's a race for who has the most banks, and Apple has a big head start.
Yep. We'll finish up with the other kind of Samsung things. They have a new 6S Edge and a 6 Note Plus.
Well, no. Thing. So the 6S Edge is...
See, I don't even know.
So, oh, well, we're saying 6S. So,
the Galaxy... Oh, sorry, S6. Oh, man, I made that mistake. Why did they name it so close? I wonder.
I know. It's pathetic. The Galaxy S6 and the Galaxy S6 Edge have been out. But today, they announced the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus. I'm surprised they didn't say Galaxy S6 Edge Plus with Verizon LTE, data.
It looks a lot like an iPhone. Close parenthesis. Yeah.
Essentially, this is like their 6 Plus
I thought they had the Note. What happened to the Note?
Well, that's the weird thing. All right, so the 6S, oh my God, I keep saying 6S. The S6 Edge Plus is like, so that is now the same size as the iPhone 6 Plus, 5.7 inches. The Note 5, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I feel like it can't be that much bigger because it's like the Note. It's interesting. The Note series was there, the whole reason the Note series was there is like big phones, but now everything's big. So the Note series is kind of like every other normal smartphone now. It's interesting. I'm trying to look up the screen size right now. Let me see here. It's 5.7 inches. So it's actually the same size as the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus.
So I guess the only reason you would want to buy one over the other is the stylus.
Yeah, the S Pen.
Do you want this S Pen? Sorry.
The S Pen.
Do you want the S Pen or do you want a curved screen on the side of your phone? Now, have you seen these? Have you seen an Edge in real life?
I have, and I have to say,
it's strange.
The first multiple times that I saw an S6 and an S6 Edge, I mistaken them for iPhone 6s, immediately. They were...
So, I thought the same thing, and I saw it, and I was like, but there's something wrong with it. And then I noticed that there's, like, this screen on the edge. Yeah,
the antenna lines are...
It looks so weird, and I saw both two women using it, and I was like, how do they do that? Does that not annoy them that, like, their picture just suddenly is, like, in a different perspective and, like, moving away from them on the side? I haven't actually held one in my hand.
Me neither.
But just seeing it from afar, it looks so awkward to use. And I don't see the benefit of the Edge, Curve, Galaxy S, the S side. Is that what they call it?
Well, okay. According to The Verge I was reading, apparently they made the edges a little more useful. You can now like swipe up menus from the edge, like, almost like a task switcher, no matter what app you're in.
Sorry, listeners, if you can't tell, we're not big fans of Samsung.
Before we move on to other Samsung stuff, we're going to have a lot of links for our show notes this week. And aside from getting the show notes from your podcast app, you can find our show notes at diagnosticsandusage.com/30, Cody. We've done 30 of
we're
these
old.
Things. What I wanted to point you to is a link from iMore. Cody, you may have saw that I just dropped it in there. And the title of the article is "Where's the Samsung Shaped Dent in the Universe?" And it's essentially side-by-side comparisons of Samsung products and iPhone products, and it's like what Samsung has copied from Apple. And another thing that came out today, I don't know if you saw, was their new watch called the Gear S2. It is...
Oh, not the S Gear 2?
I'm confused.
It doesn't have...
There's
no screen on the edge. I'm not buying that.
I don't know if you're opening that link right now, but if you see that they have the rounded icons just like the Apple Watch...
I actually thought it was like an Apple Watch mock-up, but it's not.
It's so shameless. Like it gets my blood boiling.
On the activity, they're running to the left, not to the right.
Oh, it's very different. That's a good point.
It's very different, Joe. And the friends. Let's see. Is that an? different colors?
I take it all back, Cody. I take it all back. I think that this is totally unique.
Yeah, Apple Watch, the top circle is blue, but on theirs, the friend starts at red.
Okay. Well, I think we can end the conversation right there. I think we cracked the case.
So we haven't talked about this on the show at all, and I think it has been a buzz in the Apple tech field of how shitty internet ads are.
And oh, yeah.
As I am on this website, as I am on iMore, looking at this thing, and I'm looking at the watch, this ad, which was at the bottom, and I was looking for the close button, and I couldn't find it, and I was like, fine, whatever, I'll deal with the bottom banner. As I scroll to go see the picture, this ad has now taken up 3/4 of my screen. I have maybe a fifth of the screen with content, but only half of that, because the right rail is an ad, the top is the nav, and the bottom is this humongous ad for a Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. With the video, thankfully, it didn't autoplay.
Can't find
the close button.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because iMore was kind of one of the big
culprits. Hit close on the ad, and it popped back up again.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, that's just unacceptable. That's okay. Just unacceptable. Yeah. It's annoying.
We haven't talked about it yet, but God, man, that annoys me. This is why I don't browse any of these websites anymore. But okay. I only have one more thing to say about Samsung.
Yes, and what is that, Cody?
So it's a hardware keyboard. And I thought that Samsung's ad was like the next big thing. Isn't this the last big thing? Like from 2007, this was the cool thing to have on your phone, was a full-size keyboard? Man, they're grappling. Just trying to find something.
Someone leaked this keyboard the other day, and... I actually made a mock-up.
We all thought it was a joke.
Yeah, and I actually made a mock-up and sent it to Renee Ritchie, and I want to send it to you right now, so hopefully you can copy and paste it in your browser. But it's essentially a Steve Jobs at the iPhone keynote, and he's showing how all the phones have the keyboards.
You know, so, I saw that. I saw you tweet that. I didn't even notice that it was the Galaxy S6. I was like, what are you doing, Joe? Like, posting random... Because I thought, oh, well, I guess it's just Joe. You know, he likes to watch the original iPhone keynote once in a while. Maybe that's what it is. Until you just called it out, I didn't even notice that was the Galaxy S6.
Yeah, I was like, you are literally rewinding 8 years back to 2007 to what Steve Jobs pointed out what didn't work. I mean, this is something... Listen, there are a lot of people that apparently are really into this type of stuff, and they're, you know, BlackBerry converts who went to smartphones, but I mean, this just seems like a really clunky thing. Like, you're going to lose it. It's going to fall or something. They also couldn't mimic the BlackBerry keyboard because of, I don't know if you remember that case that Ryan Seacrest came out for the iPhone. It's called the Typo.
He got sued over it.
So they had to kind of go unique. And apparently, you know, it doesn't really feel like a BlackBerry keyboard. But man, it's just like, this is one of those things where I don't think we're going to see it next generation. I think this is just Samsung throwing something to the wall, seeing if it sticks. And I'm almost curious. I don't think this will.
Well, we'll see. God.
Okay. And they got it.
I can't talk about Samsung anymore. It's so ridiculous. I'm so disappointed in them.
I just saw a picture of the keyboard snapped to the back of the phone. So like when you're not using it, you just have this like...
I wonder if it bends. Do you think it bends?
I doubt it.
Samsung keyboard Bendgate 2016.
Yeah. All right. Enough of this nonsense. I think we should wrap it up.
Thanks. And this this episode sponsored by Samsung. Thanks, Samsung. Next big thing, it's here. from 2007.
So, as I just mentioned, show notes are at diagnosticsandusage.com/30. You can hit us up at the show Twitter account, @DAU Show, if you have any follow-up. We've been getting a pretty good trend of follow-up, listener feedback, and keep them coming. We love
to hear from you guys.
It's awesome. Cody, where can people find you on Twitter?
at CP Coates.
And I can be found at Joe Caiati, C-A-I-A-T-I, and I write at joecaiati.info. That'll be all. So we'll talk to you all soon. Cody, you have a great night.
Bye.